When I read her poems, these original hard as steel poems, when I read her poems, these original hard as steel poems, and I feel the intensity in every word, words used in new ways, beat to her will, then I think she was self-sufficient, an artist whose mind was never asleep, whose concentration recreated, made fresh all that she saw and felt, as though she saw through the ordinary barriers, not as a visionary, but as a laser beam. But when I think of how little recognition she received in her lifetime, and how devastated she must have felt, though her fierce pride concealed it, then I am angry and sad. Yes, a great artist knows and can work in almost total isolation, but it is a terrible thing to have to do. The original mind seems eccentric, even crazy sometimes. In her cryptic inventions, she broke the tiresome mold of American poetry. We still stand among those shards and splinters. Okay. Many a phrase has the English language. I have heard but one, low as the laughter of the cricket, loud as the thunder's tongue, murmuring like old Caspian choirs when the tides are lull, saying itself in new inflection like a whippoorwill, breaking in bright orthography on my simple sleep, thundering in prospective till I stir and weep, not for the sorrow done me, but the push of joy. Say it again, Saxon, hush, only for me. there's another one here that I think is so. The loneliness one dare not sound. I'm not sure I can see this. Loneliness one dare not sound, and would as soon surmise as in its grave go plumbing to ascertain the size. The loneliness whose worst alarm is lest itself should see and perish from before itself from such a scrutiny. The horror not to be surveyed but skirted in the dark with consciousness suspended and being under lock. I fear me this is loneliness, the maker of the soul, its caverns and its corridors illuminate or seal. When I hoped, I recollect just the place I stood. Out a window facing west, roughest air was good. Not a sleet could bite me, not a frost could cool. Hope it was that kept me warm, not merino shawl. When I feared, I recollect just the day it was. Worlds were lying out to sun, yet how nature froze icicles upon my soul, prickled blue and cool. Birds went praising everywhere, only me was still. And the day that I despaired, this, if I forget, nature will, that it be night after sun has set. Darkness intersect her face and put out her eye. Nature hesitate before memory and I. One anguish in a crowd, a minor thing, it sounds, and yet unto the single doe, attempted of the hounds, this terror as consummate as legions of alarm did leap full-flanked upon the host. Its units make the swarm. A small leech on the vitals, the sliver in the lung, the bung out of an artery, are scarce accounted harms, yet mighty by relation so that to that repealless thing, a being impotent to end when once it has begun. I guess what I'm most struck by Emily Dickinson is her amazing use of language. And also, I think that she felt very keenly the lack of recognition in her own life. Those two things, besides her consummately beautiful poetry that was so advanced, she was a child of the future, and it was lonely to be that way. All right, my poems, which are in a different mode. The Nose. Everyone complains about the nose. If you notice it is stuck to your face, in the morning it will be red. If you are a woman, you can cover it with makeup. If you are a man, it means you had a good time last night. Noses are phallic symbols. So are fingers, monuments, trees, and cucumbers. The familiar he knows is stuck should be looked into. There is big business in nose jobs, the small nose having gained popularity during the Christian boom. Noses get out of joint, but a broken nose is never the same thing as a broken heart. They say, bless your heart, shake hands, blow your nose. When kissing, there is apt to be a battle of wills over which side your nose will go on. While a nosebleed next to a good cry is a natural physic, a nosy person smells you out, and looking down your nose will make you cross-eyed. Although the nose is no longer used for rooting and shoving, it still gets into some unlikely places. The old saying, he won by a nose, and he cut off his nose to spite his face, illustrate the value of the nose. In conclusion, three out of four children are still equipped with noses at birth, and the nose, more often than not, accompanies the body to its last resting place. Codicil. I am still bitter about the last place we stayed. The bed was really too small for both of us. In that same rooming house, walls were lined with filing cases, drawers of bird's eggs packed in cotton. The landlady described them as widow of the ornithologist. Actually, he was a postal clerk. She was proprietor of the remains, had accompanied him on his holidays collecting eggs. Yes, he would send her up the tree, and when she faltered, he would shout, put it in your mouth, put it in your mouth. It was nasty, she said, closing a drawer with her knee. Faintly blue, freckled, mauve, taupe, chalk-white eggs. As we turned the second flight of stairs toward a mattress unfit for two, her voice would echo up the well, something about an electric kettle at the foot of our bed. Eggs, 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 in secret muted shape in my head. Hundreds of unborn, wizened eggs. I think about them when I think of you. Dig you up and wipe off the rhyme and look at you. You are my joke, my poem. Your eyelids pull back from their sockets, your mouth mildews and scallops. Worm filaments sprout from the pockets of your good suit. I hold your sleeves in my arms. Your waist drops a little putrid flesh. I show you my old shy breast. Names. My grandmother's name was Nora Swan. Old Aiden Swan was her father. But who was her mother? I don't know my great-grandmother's name. I don't know how many children she bore. Like rings of a tree, the years of woman's fertility. Who were my great-aunt Swans? For every year a child, diphtheria, dropsy, typhoid. Who can bother naming all those women churning butter, leaning on scrub boards, holding to iron bedposts, sweating in labor? My grandmother knew the names of all the plants on the mountain. Those were the names she spoke of to me. Sorrel, lamb's ear, spleenwort, heelall. Never go hungry, she said, when you can gather a pot of greens. She had a finely drawn head under a smooth cap of hair, pulled back to a bun. Her deep-set eyes were quick to notice in love and anger. Who are the women who nurtured her for me? Who handed her in swaddling flannel to my great-grandmother's breast? Who are the women who brought my great-grandmother tea and straightened her bed? As anemone in midsummer, the air cannot find them, and grandmother's been at rest for 40 years. In me are all the names I can remember. Pennyroyal, bonesack, bedstraw, toadflax, from whom I did descend in perpetuity. Where I came from, my father put me in my mother, but he didn't pick me out. I am my own quick woman. What drew him to my mother? Beating his drumsticks, he thought, why not? And he gave her an umbrella. Their marriage was like that. She hid ironically in her apron. Sometimes she cried into the biscuit dough. When she wanted to make a point, she would sing a hymn or an old song. He was loose-footed. He couldn't be counted on until his pockets were empty. When he was home, the kettle drum, the snare drum, the celeste, the triangle throbbed. While he changed their heads, the drum skins soaked in the bathtub. Collapsed and wrinkled, they floated like huge used condoms. The talking fish. My love's eyes are red as the sargasso, with lights behind the iris like a cephalopod's. The weeds move slowly. November's diatom stain the soft, stagnant belly of the sea. Mountains, atolls, coral reefs, do you desire me? Am I among the jellyfish of your griefs? I comb my sorrows singing. Any doomed sailor can hear the rising and falling bell and begin to wish for home. There is no choice among the voices of love. Even a carp sings. Let's see. I don't know whether to read this. I have some poems called The Poetry Factory, but I don't know whether to read them or not. I don't know. Let's see. Okay. Well, all right. I will. They're very silly, though. They're called Some Things You'll Need to Know Before You Join the Union. At the poetry factory, body poems are writhing and bleeding. An angry mob of women is lined up at the back door hoping for jobs. Today at the poetry factory, they are driving needles through the poems. Everyone's excited. Mr. Pobiz himself comes in from the front office. He clenches his teeth. Any more wildcat aborting out there, he hisses, and you're all blacklisted. The mob jeers. The anti-war and human rights poems are processed in the white room. Everyone in there wears sterile gauze. These poems go for a lot. No one wants to mess up. There's expensive equipment involved. The workers have to be heavy, very heavy. These poems are packaged in cement. You frequently hear them drop with a dull thud. Poems are being shipped out by freight car. Headed up the ramp, they can't turn back. They push each other along. They will go to the packing houses. The slaughter will be terrible. An inevitable end of overproduction. The poetry factory's GNP. Their shelf life will be brief. They're stuffing at the poetry factory today. They're jamming in images saturated with as and like. Lines are being stuffed to their limit. If a line by chance explodes, there's a great cheer. However, most of them don't explode. Most of them lie down and groan. In the poetry factory, it's very hot. The bellows are going. The pressure is building up. Young poems are being rolled out, ready to be cut. Whistles are blowing. Jive is rocking. Barrels of thin words line the walls. Fat words like links of sausages hang on belts. Floor walkers and straw bosses take a coffee break. Only the nervous apprentice is anywhere near the machine when a large poem seems about to come off the assembly line. This is it, the apprentice shouts. Get my promotion ready. APR, the quarterlies, a chapbook, NEA, a creative writing chair, the poetry circuit, yado! Inside the ambulance, as it drives away, he is still shouting. I'll grow a beard, become an alcoholic, consider suicide. Curtains. Putting up new curtains, other windows intrude, as though it is that first winter in Cambridge when you and I had just moved in. Now cold borscht alone in a bare kitchen. What does it mean if I say this years later? Listen, last night I am on a crying jag with my landlord, Mr. Tempesta. I sneaked in two cats. He screams, no pets, no pets. I become my Aunt Virginia, proud but weak in the head. I remember Abba Magnani. I throw a few books. I shout. He wipes his eyes and opens his hands. Okay, okay, keep the dirty animals, but no nails in the walls. We cry together. I am so nervous, he says. I want to dig you up and say, look, it's like the time, remember, when I ran into our living room naked to get rid of that fire inspector? See what you missed by being dead? Okay, let's see. I guess I won't read that one. Metamorphosis. Metamorphosis. Now I'm old. All I want to do is try. But when I was young, if it wasn't easy, I let it lie, learning through my pores instead, and it did neither of us any good. For now she is gone, who slept away my life, and I am ignorant who inherited, though the head has grown so lively that I laugh, come look, come stamp, come listen to the drum. I see more now than then, but she who had my eyes closed them in happiness and wrapped the dark in her arms and stole my life away, singing in dreams of what was sure to come. I see it perfectly, except the beast fumbles and falters until the others wince. Everything shimmers and glitters and shakes with unbearable longing, the dancers who cannot sleep and the sleepers who cannot dance. Turn your eyes away. The gendarme came to tell me you had hung yourself on the door of a rented room, like an overcoat, like a bathrobe hung from a hook. When they forced the door open, your feet pushed against the floor. Inside your skull, there was no room for us. Your circuits forgot me. Even in Paris, where we never were, I wait for you, knowing you will not come. I remember your eyes as if I were someone you had never seen, a slight frown between your brows, considering me. How could I have guessed the plain-spoken stranger in your face, your body tagged in a drawer, attached to nothing, incurious? My sister, my spouse, you said, in a place on the other side of the earth, where we lay in a single bed, unable to pull apart, breathing into each other, the Gideon Bible open to the Song of Songs, the rush of the L train jarring the window. As if needles were stuck in the pleasure zones of our brains, we repeated everything over and over and over. Women laughing. Laughter from women gathers like reeds in the river. A silence of light below their rhythm glazes the water. They are on a rim of silence looking into the river. Their laughter traces the water as kingfishers dipping circles within circles set the reeds clicking, and an upward rush of herons lifts out of the nest of laughter, their long stick legs dangling, herons rising out of the river. Translations. 45 years ago, Alexander Mihailovich Turitsin, son of a white Russian owner of a silk stocking factory in Constantinople, we rumpled your rooming house bed, sneaked past your landlady and turned your plaster Madonna to the wall. Are you out there, short, vulgar civil engineer? Did you know I left you for a Princeton geologist who called me girly? 10 years later, he was still in the Midwest when he died under a rock fall. I told you I was pregnant. You gave me money for the abortion. I lied to you. I needed clothes to go out with the geologist. You called me Kushka, little cat. Sometimes I stopped by the civil engineering library where you sat with other foreign students. You were embarrassed my husband might catch you. He was in the chemistry lab with his Bunsen burner boiling water for tea. Alexander Mihailovich Turitsin, big of my pallid college days, plum of my head. Did the silk stocking factory go up in flames? Did the German fox jump out of the desert sleeve and gobble your father up? Are you dead? Second-hand engine, formula concrete. We were still meeting in stairwells when the best chess player in Champaign-Urbana went to the Spanish Civil War. He couldn't resist heroic gestures. For years, I was haunted by the woman who smashed her starving infant against the Spanish wall. Cautious, staid Mihailovich, so quick to pick my hairpins out of your bed. Average lover, have your balls decayed? Mihailovich, my husband, the chemist with light eyes and big head, the one whose body I hated, came back in the flesh 15 years ago. He was wearing a tight Western shirt he had made himself. There wasn't anything he couldn't do. He talked about wine and cheese tasting parties. We folk danced at a ski lodge. So this is life, I said. He told my daughter he was her daddy. It wasn't true. You are all so boring. My friend from Japan, Kana Maeda, the scholar of classical haiku, whose fingers, whose entire body had been trained to comply, her face pale without powder, her neck so easily bent. After she died from the radiation, her translations of Basho were published by interested men who failed to print her correct name, so the narrow book appears to have been written by a man. Faded in these ways, she is burned on my flesh as kimonos were burned on the flesh of women in the gamma rays of Hiroshima. She wasn't one of those whose skin peeled in the Holocaust, whose bones cracked. Graceful and obscure, she was among all those others who died later. Where are you, my repulsive white Russian? Are you also lost? Pimpled, obscene boy, employed at an early age by your father, you pandered his merchandise on trays, using your arm as a woman's leg slipped inside a silk stocking with a woman's shoe on your hand. Do you understand that later I lived with a transvestite, a hairdresser who wore a wig? When he felt that way, he would go out and pick up an English professor. After we quarreled, I cut up his foam rubber falsies. I had a garage sale while he was out of town. I sold his mail order high heels, his corsets, his sequined evening gowns. Those afternoons in bed, listening to your memories of prostitutes with big breasts, how you wanted to roll on a mattress of mammary glands. The same when Rip Hansen told me about the invasion of France. Crossing the channel, he saw infantry falling past him from split-open cargo planes, still clinging to tanks and bulldozers, statistical losses figured in advance. The ripped-open remnants of a Russian girl nailed up by the Germans outside her village, also ancient, indigenous. But what can I tell you about death? Even your sainted mother's soft dough body, her flour-dusted breasts, by now are slime paths of microorganisms. Where were you when they fed the multitudes to the ovens? Old fetid fish eyes, did they roll you in at the cannery? Did you build their bridges or blow them up? Are you burned to powder? Were you mortarized? Did you die in a ditch, Mihailovich? Are you exorcised? Poor, innocent lecher, you believed in sin. I see you rising with the angels, thin, forgotten, dirty-fingered son of a silk stocking factory owner in Constantinople. May you be exonerated. May you be forgiven. May you be a wax taper in paradise. Alexander Mihailovich Turitsyn. I'll read one more. Orange poem praising Brown. The quick brown poem jumped over the lazy woman. There it goes, flapping like an orange with peeling wings, like an old dried orange with hard peel wings. The thick brown poem jumped over the desperate woman. There you go, my segments, my divided fruit, escaping. The thick woman jumped over the lousy poem. It's brown, she sighed. Watch it, the poem cried. You aren't wearing any pants. The empty places of the poem, the odor of the poem. Brown approached. Praise my loose hung dangle, he said. Tell me about myself in oral fragments. Refer to Brown, not you, not her. The thick lenses through which the poem lurked. Come, says the poem, see my harmless teeth, kiss my vicious lips. Rising in the greasy air, the orange poem, heavy with brown, goes to the dump. It does not even like the taste of itself. The thick typewriter jumps over the lazy poet. You have not yet praised Brown, it said, and you call yourself a poet. Jump over that.